No. Right. The podcast that uncovers the origin stories of some of the biggest names in sports, media, and entertainment. Nick Durst here along with Joe Calabrese. Joe, we've had some great soccer guests on before. This is going to be another one, but I would say of all the soccer guests we've had, this one's the most rad.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Played in the MLS for a really long time, 13 years. He was one of the premier defenders. He's played for the U.S. men's national team, played for the World Cup. Does a lot of soccer media here in the States, works with CBS Sports and Fox Sports. And he has his own YouTube channel, the Jimmy Conrad. So we would like to welcome Jimmy Conrad. Yes, he is rad, to the program. I like that little dance and stretch that you were doing at the beginning for everybody who's going to be watching this on video. But what's up? How you doing today?
I'm doing great. You're saying that we're going to interview the biggest name in sports and celebrities. And I'm like, who's coming on the show? I'm really excited to find out. But no, obviously, it's an honor to be invited to come on. And I'm excited to talk some soccer with you.
Absolutely. So you, of course, you played at UCLA. You won a national title. And you go undrafted for MLS. What was that like for you?
It's unacceptable, frankly, Nick. That's where I'll start. I don't know really if I was ready. At that point in MLS's history, there were, I think, 10 teams, and you had to make the 18-man roster. So there were only 180 spots. And if you look back to the DC United teams at that point, the ones that were winning those early championships, every single starter on that DC United team played for their national team. So you can't say that anymore, right? I mean, I don't want to say we've diluted the talent pool, but when you add more teams, now you maybe have, what, four or five guys that represent their national teams that are in the starting 11? So that's just a really significant difference to what it once was. And it was hard. And you only had two rounds of the draft. This is me making a ton of excuses as to why I didn't get drafted, by the way. And I thought for sure, after winning the national championship, the highest level that you could at Division I with UCLA, that I would get drafted because we were the best. And the other four seniors did, and I didn't. And in hindsight, it hurt at the time, not going to lie. But in hindsight, it really forced me to make a decision about what I wanted out of my life. Is this the path that I actually want to go on? Am I willing to sacrifice and suffer to achieve that? It's something I didn't even know I was capable of doing yet. I had to navigate the high seas of lower division soccer is where I'm going here. And as much as I started training with the Galaxy a little bit. So I got a taste of what that level looked like. And to be around Robin Fraser, who was there at the time, Greg Vanney, Dan Kalichman, who are still friends, and obviously they're coaching now in MLS. And they were players. You have Mauricio Cienfuegos. You have so many guys. Edwin Hurtado, El Tanque was there, right? So I got to go up against El Tanque as the big, young, dumb defender and had to learn how to get better at the skill and the craft of being a top defender. So all those were really valuable lessons, but they had no room for me on the roster. So I had to go down to lower division soccer, played in San Diego. And I think what I learned very quickly, guys, was that, as you can tell, I'm a talker, is that I played 30 games in 6 months playing for San Diego. Had I stayed with the Galaxy or signed with an MLS team, I just would have trained and did a lot of practicing for 6 months. And so getting that game experience, learning how to prepare for a game, like, okay, it's game day today. I know I'm starting. My team's going to count on me. How am I preparing? How am I eating? How am I sleeping? What am I doing for hydration? All this type of stuff. That is just different when you're just practicing. So it ultimately proved to be better for me to take one step back to go two steps forward. And once I did that and then got signed by San Jose the following year, I didn't look back.
So you mentioned you're playing in the A-League. At the time, the MLS players weren't getting paid much. So I can't imagine you were getting much money at all. So how did you just...
$800 a month, Nick. $800 a month. Absolutely loved it.
Did you room with like seven guys? How did that work?
No. So good question. I had a family member that lives in San Diego. So I slept and I went to San Diego State for 2 years. So I probably could have bunked with some of my old college teammates, but I ultimately stayed with my aunt and uncle and slept essentially in a guest room on a couch.
Nice.
And you know, you feel bad because you're kind of there and you don't know how long it's going to last. And you're always promising, oh, I'm going to get the call up at some point. You know, you're always kind of dangling this carrot for them. So you don't feel like an absolute freeloader. So I try not to invade their space too much and not eat all of their food, but sometimes you get a little hungry. So I was scavenging a lot of different ways, but you know what, looking back, and it's crazy to think of the things I've accomplished, but looking back, that was probably my favorite year because I didn't know if I was going to make it or not, but I was giving it everything that I possibly could. So I would train in the morning with the team And then I would go do extra in the evenings, mainly technical stuff. I started training with a tennis ball at that point. I would find friends that were nearby, like, let's play some soccer tennis. Let's go run on the beach. Hey, you want to come run hills with me? Like, I was doing everything I possibly could to take advantage of my time. And I really adopted a mentality of just trying to get better than I was the day before.
Let's talk about your playing career. You joined the San Jose Earthquakes, won the MLS Cup in 2001, spent a majority of your career with the Kansas City Wizards, but there you won MLS Best 11 four times. You won 2005 Defender of the Year. You parlayed a terrific defensive career into, again, representing the U.S. men's national team. You represented us in the 2006 World Cup. So just talk to me about your playing career and your experience playing in San Jose, Kansas City.
Yeah, great questions. I would say with regard to San Jose, I was still a bit naive to the dark arts of defending. I would say that I honestly, we could probably get into a big conversation. I feel like defending is a lost art right now in the modern game, and we don't have a lot of discipline in certain areas, whether it's positional discipline, situational discipline, and it drives me, and I'm really good friends with Michael Parkhurst, who is not a big guy, right? We're not big physical specimens like former teammates of mine, like let's say Jada Merritt or Gucci Anyewu, who just are blessed with these incredible physical gifts. And obviously they could play as well. We weren't like that. So we had to figure out different ways to have success. And a lot of it was positioning. And I feel like we're not seeing that anymore. And so early on in San Jose, I was in my feelings. I was just worried about me just trying to get a little bit better every day, but also trying to figure out how to survive, because the turnover in MLS at that point was very high. And I think you could probably go into it now. I mean, you're losing 10 to 12 guys every season. So how do you survive? How do you play well enough to survive? And in some ways, how do you not make too much money so that you're not the first name on the sheet that they're going to cut at the end of the year so they can bring in somebody else? I mean, there's so many different areas of things you have to think about. Also, performance, right? So it was an interesting time. And when we won MLS Cup, I was 23. So let me say it like this. In 2000, we were the worst team in the league. 2001, we won it. Now, we won the Landon Donovan sweepstakes. He came back from Germany at that point. We had traded for Jeff Agus, so we got some stability in the middle of midfield. And we had a lot of younger guys that were now entering into our third year. And Frank Yalp, it was his first year as coach. Dom Kinnear was his first year as coach as an assistant. We just had a nice collection of guys. And then you bring in grizzled veterans like Ronnie Eklund, who's so steady in his performance, Manny Lagos, and then Dwayne De Rosario is ready to take that next step in his. I mean, we were stacked when you look back on it. But at that time, we just didn't know. And once we won it in 2001, at age 23, honestly, guys, I thought I was going to win like 18 MLS Cups in my career. I thought, oh, God, I got one at 23. I didn't win another one. I went to one more final. We got absolutely hosed by the referees, and we lost to DC United. That's a longer story. We don't need to get into that. But unless you want to, and then you're going to really trigger me. But when I got to Kansas City, that's when things changed. Now, when I was in San Jose, I played left back. I played center back. We played a back three. I was on the right. I was on the left. I'm never in the middle. I played right back. When we won MLS Cup, I started at right back. I was a little bit all over the place. And when I went to Kansas City my first year, we played a back three under Bob Gansler. And he had me as one of the markers. Now, I'll tell you, it's pretty insulting if you really like defending. It's what they old school college coaches will do. They'll put you in a 3-5-2, and if you're one of the outside guys in the three, they'll be like, yeah, you're just marking the other forward. That's it. That's your job. Just don't let them score. And it just felt like grunt work. And it felt at that point, maybe I'm a bit of an elitist right now, but it just felt like I was capable of more than that. And when Preki was at league MVP in 2003 for us in Kansas City. He was sick. That guy's amazing. He broke his leg in the preseason of 2004. And we had to change everything. We went from a back three to a back four. And that's when the rocket fuel took off, because I was in my best position. I was of an age where I was ready to do more and take on more responsibility. And I understood how to not only elevate my game, but the players around me. And then you start to see me go up for Defenders of the Year, MLS Best 11, and push into the national team. And it just took off from there. So once I finally got into my best position, I was at the right age and ready to go. That's when everything started to change for me on a much bigger level.
So you mentioned it before, DC United, they're the best team back then.
Peters.
So when you guys were playing at that time, were you guys getting up to play them? Like, did you want to say, there's a 14-year-old kid in this team, Freddie Adu, we're going to get up to show him who's boss? And also, how much just has MLS changed from the late 90s when you played to now, where it's expanding. There's a new team every year. And what do you think of the pros and cons of where it is now versus where it was?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to go with the Freddie Adu question first. We played DC United in the final, Kansas City, 2004. What's crazy about that 2004 team for us was that we won Open Cup. So we had one of the three trophies you can win. We had tied for points for the Supporters Shield, which is the team with the best regular season record. But somebody else, I forgot who it was, they had scored more goals than us. They had won the tiebreaker because they scored two more goals than we did. That sucks. And then we go to the MLS Cup final. We're up 1-0, and we end up giving up three goals in 15 minutes and end up making it 3-2. I mean, we're what, three goals away from being the first treble winner in MLS history? It would have been insane, right? So we were really, really good. And really, I think if anything, we had an identity. And it hurt to lose to Freddie Adu. He didn't have much impact in that game at all, but that was his first professional year. And the way that we lost, right? We were so good defensively. We had the best defensive record. And this is, I think, the curse. This was the kiss of death for us, was that we won a lot of games 1-0 that season. And we scored 3 minutes into that game, 3 or 4 minutes into the game. So when you're a team that likes to win 1-0, when you got 86 minutes left to hold on to a 1-0 lead, it just kind of changed. We're like, oh, wow. That's a lot of time to try to hold on to a lead. And we were just in somewhat unfamiliar territory there. We made a couple of mistakes. We gave up an own goal and it just kind of fell apart. And we still had a chance to maybe get the result. I'm not bitter at all, boys. It's not just fresh in my mind all the time. But it was a good learning experience for us. And I think we were so close to recognizing the greatness that we had in our team. Now, with regard to what's happening now to back then, I already mentioned it before. When you think about those old DC United teams, honestly stacked with national team players in the starting 11. I think what you're seeing now is, okay, you might not have as much of national team starters in each particular MLS team, but the depth is getting better. The professionalism is infinitely better. Like when I was in San Jose, we'd have to change in this little rinky-dink locker room and then drive 30 minutes to this youth soccer field to go practice. And then you didn't want to drive all the way back to San Jose State. So you took off all your clothes and you either had to put them in your trunk and go wash them yourself or put them in a bag and leave them for the equipment manager who probably hated us. And then he would take it all back and do the laundry for you. And it was a mess, right? So that's just one of many, 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 many stories of where things have improved and how the players are being treated and even how the fields are being taken care of and the state. I mean, there's so many little nuances and details that have improved. It's really incredible and it's fun to watch. And I'm so proud of where it's come and how much farther it has to go. Obviously there's some areas that can still improve, but with regard to talent, it just was really hard to make a team. And right now I think they give you more opportunities than ever to, if you're good enough, that you're probably going to get a look. And I can't say that was necessarily the case back in the day. I actually think, well, the big conversation to have is, was it easier to make an MLS team back then? Or was it easier to make an MLS team now? And of course, I'm a little biased because I came through the system of before, but I just think there just wasn't enough roster spots and not enough teams. And now I think that because of youth academies, because of MLS Next Pro, because of all these things that are being put in place, and obviously the continued development and evolution and maturation of youth soccer in general, and now that you have guys that played when I was playing now filtering back into the system and being coaches and making sure that things are better at a grassroots level, everything's improving. And now we're seeing, or I'm a big fan of that. That phrase that a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think we're starting to see that. And so everything's better for sure. But it was hard to get in the league early on in early days. And we could argue maybe the quality was better in some ways at times. But from what I'm seeing now, it's the kids are so much better than I ever was at any point in my career. So it's really fun and exciting to watch.
You had to work hard. You worked your way up. Finally get that call to play for the U.S. men's national team. You played for them 2005 and 2009, the CONCACAF Gold Cups, the 2007 Copa America, and the World Cup in 2006. So your feelings when you're told, hey, you made the team, you're going to do it, and then ultimately what it was like to play in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, so, you know, you let me say it like this. In 2005, I got my first call. I had been patiently waiting for Bruce Arena to even look in my direction for years and years and years. And in 2004, I had mentioned before in Kansas City, that's where everything started to shift, right? I had a really good year. We had the best defensive team. We won the Open Cup, got to the MLS Cup final. I mean, everything was kind of working for us. And I was a big reason as to why that was happening. And I still couldn't get a call. That's when the players are going out on strike. And all of a sudden, Bruce Arena calls me and asks me to be a scab, ultimately, to come in. And I said I couldn't do it. Like, that's not why I wanted to get called into the national team. I wanted it to be based on merit. So they resolved that. So January camp in 2005 is still on. And the only reason I got called in was because Danny Califf decided to go not come into camp and go over to Europe to try to play in Denmark or wherever he ended up. So I actually owe Danny Califf a great deal for my success. Appreciate you, Danny. And so I got into that camp and I realized quite quickly that this is my moment. I have to prove that I'm better than like all the people they're calling in. Obviously I'm not going to displace Eddie Pope's of the world and love Eddie Pope and those guy types of guys, but can I be the next tier? Can I be a guy that they can rely on no matter what the situation, always have good energy, good enthusiasm, ready for anything and can solve problems when I get on the field. And I did that. And I really stood out over those 3 weeks. I was really proud of myself. Made the first World Cup qualifier roster. I was part of the 23, but I wasn't in the 18. It was a good experience. We were down in Trinidad, and that's in the middle of Eddie Johnson scoring like 18,000 goals in a row and got a big contract himself. And so that was a little bit of a taste of, okay, I'm right there. How do I maintain that? And then I got called into the Gold Cup in 2005. I was the only player to play in all six games, and we ended up winning in penalties over Panama in the final. And I knew that tournament for me in particular was important because that was as close as we're going to get to a World Cup competition. You have a group stage. How are you going to prepare? How do you fit in with the group? So I knew that I wasn't going to go in there and most likely be a starter. So you have to approach it different. Okay, how can I fit into what Bruce Arena and coaching staff are looking for? And so, again, I tried to make myself indispensable. Not that I'm like going out there and getting people water, giving like massages to other guys, you know, but I'm like, I'm trying to be as open and friendly and hardworking as possible. And all, again, when you put me out on the field, you're trusting me to do a job and I follow through on that trust. And I can't tell you how important that is for a coach to know that you have players in your team that are reliable. And so I just tried to be Mr. Reliable. So I actually, there's 2 days between games. I played the first game against Cuba. We were down 1-0. Boys, let me tell you, I thought, holy crap, my national team debut, and I'm down 1-0 to Cuba. This is not going well. But thankfully, it's Clint Dempsey's debut as well. He ended up scoring right before half, and then we cruised in the second half. We wore him down. So that was good. Next game, we played Canada 2 days later, and it was a completely different team. And Eddie Pope or someone else got a little bit of a hamstring strain or something, and I popped in. I played the second half. And I was tired, right? I mean, you play 2 days before, but I knew that that was a big moment for me to be able to be trusted upon in any situation. And I followed through on that trust. So now let's just fast forward. I'm part of a lot of games and most people weren't thinking I was going to be included, right? I was a bubble guy and I was playing solid all the way through both club and country. Maybe my game against Germany wasn't as great. We had a friendly against them in March. Anyway, we don't have to get into that. But that said, ultimately, when I got named, and I'm saying this is a really long answer to say that I was walking on clouds when I got named to the team. I could not believe it. It is the biggest middle finger to everybody that's, I got told that I wasn't good enough to play in college. I got told to my face that I would never be a pro. I mean, I have all these big chips on my shoulders. So when that happens, they can't ever take that away from you. Nobody can ever say that you weren't, it's the most satisfying feeling of all time. Now at that moment, I wasn't thinking that. I wasn't in my bitter mode or like the FU mode, but I was just walking in dreamland. And I can still remember my wife and I, like, what do we do? You know, so we walked in. I don't drink very often, so we went and just had a glass of wine and got after it. Now what's crazy, just an addendum to this, is that once you get named, not to say that wears off, but it kind of wears off, and then you realize, hey, I'm busting my ass here because the pre-World Cup camps are insanely tough. It'd be kind of cool to say that I got to play in the World Cup, right? So now there becomes a different distinction, and thankfully I had that opportunity.
So no thinking here. From your perspective, who do you think is the best U.S. American-born soccer player of all time? And what we're seeing from Christian Pulisic right now, immediately making an impact with AC Milan and what he's done previously overseas now, coming off that 2022 World Cup run, heading into 2026. His name's got to be up there. But Landon Donovan, a lot of great names. Who comes to mind for you as the best? No thinking.
Well, no thinking. That's impossible,
Joe. No thinking.
I mean, I think Pulisic at the end of the day will definitely be in the conversation. It's going to be an era thing, just like we have with the U.S. women. you know, was it, I mean, Mia Hamm, is she Abby Wambach, Alex Morgan? They're all kind of different styles of players, but they should be in the conversation as some of the best we've ever produced. I mean, Sophia Smith could punch in there. Kat Macario gets healthy. I mean, we have so many, I don't know. It's
don't forget the goalies.
The goalkeeper, I try to leave them out, but the goalkeepers are in their own category, frankly, and they're also crazy, crazy bastards, so they should be in their own category. I
come on, go with your teammate.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, there's something, Landon Donovan, I'll say this, the guy made the most incredible off-the-ball runs. I remember playing against him in an MLS game, and he made this run off my shoulder. His timing was chef's kiss, right? It was so good, but he just wasn't surrounded by players that can make the pass. So I laughed at him like, man, if you had players, I said this to him, if you had players that actually make that pass, you probably had 3 goals this game, you know? And I think he was underappreciated in that sense, his timing, his off the ball movement. When I think about Clint Dempsey, Clint is a little bit more like, give me the ball. I'm going to put the team on my back and I'm going to do something. I'm going to make something happen. Not to say that Landon didn't have that in him, but there was a little bit more swagger, I think, to Clint's game. And that, we're all drawn to that a little bit. Whereas I think at times, not that Landon, I shied away from that, but I just think that that wasn't what he was looking for. Everybody plays a game for a reason, right? And Clint played with a chip on his shoulder and Landon played for different reasons. And I think they're both respectable, you know, motivations, but it's interesting. Also, I got to throw the name DeMarcus Beasley in the mix too, because Bees is a really special player and he has played for so long, and his longevity and his consistency over his career. I really love Bees as a human and then as a player as well. And I always get a little disappointed when he's not thrown into the conversation, because when Landon got the golden ball at what, the U-17s or the Olympics or whatever, DeMarcus got the silver ball. You know, it wasn't like he was always just kind of right below Landon and played at the same time. And it's a little bit of a shame he's not in the conversation a little bit more. So shout out to Bees here. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of special players along the way, but yeah, of course Clint and Landon are going to stand out because they got the numbers as well.
So the decision to retire is never easy. However, you found it easier in your post-playing career to be able to give back to the game, getting into coaching, working as a broadcaster here, working for CBS Sports. You did some World Cup stuff here recently for Fox Sports, mm-hmm. working as an AT&T ambassador and a host for EA Sports. It's in the game. So just explain how you've been able to give back, especially to American soccer, because again, the game is still growing in this country, even to this day. It's boomed over here the last 2 to 3 decades in a very special way. So how special it is to be able to give back to the game in that way after playing.
Oh, it's incredible. I feel like I am very grateful ultimately that I have this opportunity, that there's a platform for crazy bastards like me. I said that about goalkeepers, but I probably fall into that category as well, to continue to be passionate, enthusiasm, and enthusiastic about the game. What I'll say is, when I was still playing, and this really helped me make that transition from playing to getting into media, I wrote an article once a month column, let's say, for Sports Illustrated. Garth Lagerwey, of all people, when he was still playing, started first. And he, highly educated, super smart Garth Lagerwey, law school, I don't have any of that because I didn't even graduate college. So I can't even compare myself to Garth. But he started this column on Sports Illustrated. And then when he was done with it and starting to transition into his next career, I had written this email when I was playing in Poland. I went on loan to play for Lech Poznan for about 4 or 5 months. And I was so done with the archaic Stone Age Wi-Fi that they had there, where, you know, you'd take like 20 minutes to send one email. It's like you'd hit send and it'd take 20 minutes to go through. I was, by the end of that trip, I wrote this scathing 1,000-word, like, Poland is so ass backwards, I don't even know what's happening here. And people loved it. And I sent it to my agent and they pitched it, actually. And I ended up getting this column to back up Garth Lagerwey. So I did that for about 4 years. And then once that ended, I went and did the same for ESPN. Now, I bring this up, and I had a radio show when I was in Kansas City as well, which was very hard, because every Wednesday night I would go live on location at a bar/restaurant in Kansas City. And if we didn't play well, I had to face the music of the fans. The fans would be like 5 feet away from me going like, why did we lose tonight? And it's just not that straightforward. Or even if it is, I can't throw players under the bus. I can't throw coaches under the bus. I can't like give too much of the tactics, right? There's still a sanctity to the inner circle of a team. And I wanted to be respectful of that. But I also wanted to give them something, right? So you're throwing these little morsels out. And when you think about writing, and if you sit down and you think, okay, what do I want to say? How do I want to say it? Why do I want to say this? You start to cultivate an identity of who you are, your voice. Ultimately, you find your inner voice and how you want to project your enthusiasm and passion, especially for this game. And so that really helped me. So when I made the transition into TV, and I did Fox Sports initially, like MLS Game of the Week with Eric Winalda and Christopher Sullivan, and for all you OGs out there that remember that show, I did that for a couple months, and then this opportunity came to do new media stuff where YouTube put $100 million into 100 channels, and one of them was called Kick TV. And I ended up being one of the faces of Kick TV, and we got to 1 million subscribers in 3.5 years. I'll say this, if Kick TV is still around, we'd be up to 10, 15 million subscribers for sure, and I think MLS and Copa 90 did a terrible, terrible job of like, they should have propped that up and given it more support than they did, because it could be a major, major tool for them to get the word out about how special the league is and can be. So anyway, that's a sidebar, but ultimately, to answer your question, because I had already found my voice while I was still playing, it made it really easy for me to find it when I was done.
So you do that stuff with the broadcasting, get a little bit into coaching. You also start your own business, founder and CEO of Radical Creative Group.
Look at you guys doing your homework. I love that.
Tell our listeners a little bit about what your company does. Let them know on a timeline of perhaps when you might see the You Know I'm Right guys, Nick and Joe, doing some work with you guys in the future. And just let everyone know where, if they want to learn more, they can go check it out.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to radicalcg.com and check it out. It's really a calling card for my company. Ultimately, it's a place for me to demonstrate all the big brands and teams I've worked with. I've worked with Bayern Munich, Manchester United, as you guys mentioned, AT&T, EA Sports. I'm an ambassador right now for Target. Just signed a deal with Vuori to do stuff with them. So it's really just a way for me to demonstrate that I'm capable of working with these brands. I'm capable of partnering with different people and companies to have fun. Ultimately, I think I've done enough out there and I'm visible enough out there that you can kind of see what my tone is. I like to be lighthearted. I mean, at the end of the day, when I think about the game that we both or all of us love, it's just a bunch of grown adults in small shorts kicking a ball in a certain direction. Like, it's not a big deal, but it's also the biggest deal in the world. Right. So it's finding that balance. And I'd like to think that I have gotten close to finding that sweet spot, at least as it pertains to my sensibilities. And so it's been a lot of fun to get in there. You can find me at Jimmy Conrad on pretty much every platform. I'm glad you brought up my YouTube. I'm not on YouTube as much as I'd like to be. It's a lot of work because YouTube's like, hey, by the way, we want you to make a video. And you know what? You have to make it 10 minutes. Otherwise we're not going to actually put it out there in a really democratic way like they used to. Oh, and by the way, it probably help if you did YouTube shorts, because if you do YouTube shorts, then you won't be on TikTok and Instagram. We want you to stay on. It's just it's not as fun as it used to be. I'll just say, yeah, it's just not as fun as it used to be. And it takes a team. And I had a team for a while through the pandemic, and I had signed a deal, a year and a half deal with Twitch to do sports streaming, which was difficult but fun. I learned a lot about the process and how to produce shows and everything that goes into it. And then I honestly just got a little worn out with everything. And I just needed to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, let's just take a breather. And at that time, I was getting opportunities to go host in Qatar with Fox Sports, and then parlay that into an opportunity in Australia for the Women's World Cup. And they have the rights to some pretty big events over the next few years, including the 2026 Men's World Cup. So yeah, it's all cooking with gas, and I love my time with CBS Sports. They've been fantastic, and they've got some great rights to some leagues as well, including the Champions League. I was at the Champions League final. So anyway, I don't know. I've just gone off on a tangent, but I'm doing a lot of cool things, and I like to work with cool people. So if you're interested, then find me. You can drop me a note at radicalcg.com, and we can take it from there.
All right, there you have it. And you mentioned the upcoming World Cup in the U.S. We'll hang out with you, Jimmy, when you're in the area for the final at MetLife Stadium or somewhere.
Wait, where are you guys based? Where are you based?
I'm in Staten Island, New York. Joe's in Jersey City. So nice. We're right there. We spent a lot of time at MetLife Stadium, the big aluminum tin can, as we like
I love
to
that
over here, because there's not much personality going on in that stadium. But plenty of personality from you in this interview. You kind of touched on it earlier before. But what would you say in your life or your career is your You Know I'm Right moment? So what I mean by that is a time or place where you wanted to pursue something for you in soccer. You asked somebody for advice, and they said, Jimmy, that's an awful idea. That's not going to work out for you. Don't do that. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. Ultimately, you will see why it is that I'm right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think I proved that. I'm living proof that if you want something bad enough and you're willing to sacrifice and suffer for it, that it could be yours. It might not go exactly the way that you want. I retired due to concussion, so I didn't have the happy ending that, or storybook ending that I think a lot of athletes think they're going to have, even though we could argue only 1% maybe get that. And even Michael Jordan had the best ending of all time, hit the winning bucket in game 6, and he couldn't even help himself and came back and played for the Washington Wizards. Worst decision ever, right? I mean, he had the storybook ending and he couldn't even see it out the right way. So yeah, it's all there. And I know that sounds maybe pie in the sky and a bit naive, but I'm also living proof that it's possible. The best piece of advice I got, though, was from Marcelo Balboa's dad when I was 15. And my club coach pulled him aside. We were at a tournament. And you could see he was reluctant. He's like, all right, what do I got to say to these kids, you know? And so we all shut up hands. He said, hey, anybody have any questions? And he points on me. And I said, hey, how did Marcelo Balboa play in 2 World Cups? Now, I think you've been on this podcast long enough to know that I would give you about a 30-minute answer as to what you should do to play in a World Cup. This dude, Louis Balboa, looks at me and goes, he just went and worked on his game every day for 2 hours at the park. And then he moved on to the next question. And I thought, light bulb, like that changed my whole life. It changed my whole life. And I then went to the park. I'm like, okay, Marcelo Balboa did it. I'm going to do it. And he grew up in my area. He grew up in Torrance, or I don't know, somewhere not too far from where I was. He can do it. I can do it. So I went to the park. I'm by myself, guys. I'm by myself. And I got my ball. And what am I supposed to work on? I had no idea what I was supposed to work on. And I'm like, okay, well, I know I'm right footed. My left foot's not great. So I start trying to juggle with my left foot. And I am so bad. Like, ball's going all over the place. I'm chasing the ball down. I'm embarrassed. Imagine being embarrassed when there's nobody else there. I mean, that's how bad it was. And after 10 minutes, I was like, I'm out. This sucks. I suck. This sucks. I never should have come out here. You know, you say all the things, you use some choice expletives along the way. I'm like, you know what? It's easier for me to go home and play video games with my pals than to actually come out here and get better. To my credit, I went back out again and I still sucked. And it just took me, I just kept going out. And I got a little bit better. And I could, you know what changed for me was I was at practice. And all of a sudden, when the ball was coming to me, I just wasn't as panicked as I was before. I was a lot more calm when the ball was coming to me, a lot more composed. And that just slowed the whole game down for me. And that once I realized that that's what was happening, that 10 minutes turned into 20 minutes. That 20 minutes turned into 30 minutes. That 30 minutes turned into an hour. That hour turned into my mom coming to go get me because it was time for dinner. Like it became a full blown addiction. And then you start to realize, wow, I wonder if I started running more, would I be fitter? Yeah, dummy. Of course, that's what it would be. And then you start lifting some weights as well. And you start to put all this together. And then everybody that you're playing with, you just start waving them goodbye because you've clearly surpassed them. And that's what starts to happen. And then you realize you get to a level where everybody's kind of doing the same thing. So how do you find those fine margins to continue to be good? But that's the challenge. And that was the best part. I miss it so much, guys. I miss playing and being a part of the process. I miss going out to practice and trying to get better at something. I'm doing media stuff now, and I do add those elements and habits and disciplines into it where I can, but it's not the same as kicking a ball and being out there and competing. I really miss competing and trying to get better every day.
I think you need to launch like Ice Cube to the Big Three League, and you could do it for soccer indoors and do, like, 3-on-3s. That would be money right there. So somebody would pay for that.
Well, there's TST, right? They have that new 77 tournament, $1 million winner take all. And I got to play in that, and I actually played more than I thought. Me and DeMarcus Beasley have a team together, and we ended up losing to Mike McGee, those chumps, cheaters, sneaky fox, but they ended up losing the next round. It was incredible. And I got to tap into all those things that I was just saying that I was missing, but it was only for a week. And it made me appreciate how important that was to me in my life and how important it will be moving forward. So I can't wait for TST next year.
Well, great things take time. For you, it took a little time, but you eventually carved out and made a terrific professional career here in the States in soccer, parlayed that into a terrific broadcasting career. Jimmy, thank you for joining us. We wish you the best moving forward. Might want to work on that YouTube channel. Maybe Nick and I will provide some help for the Jimmy Conrad. But yeah, YouTube shorts work. Nick and I know that really, really well. So again, if you need any pointers or any help, we'll be happy to assist you along the way. But what we do here is we give our guests the last words. So if there's anything else on top of that that you would like to share or promote for yourself, places where people, young soccer fans can go find you, by all means, go ahead and share. But we really appreciate you doing this. We've had Tommy Smith on with us in the past, Alexi Lalas, Max Brentas. So it's like every now and then when Nick and I get a soccer guest, you know, we're excited because it's a little something different than what we're usually accustomed to. But we had a lot of great times here with you and a lot of fun. So the last words are yours.
I appreciate that. I feel like I've talked enough, so I'm going to keep it very, very brief. The brief that brief as defined by Jimmy Conrad. Now, I will say that there's one video on my YouTube channel. It's the one that's pinned at the top. It's called Draw My Life. And it was a YouTube trend back in the day where I can't draw, so I'm just a bunch of stick figures. But it really kind of explains this process that I went through when I was struggling to figure out if this is exactly what I wanted to do or not. And it's only 8 minutes long, and I still have people that came out 8 to 10 years ago, and people still come up to me and talk to me about it because it had that type of impact. So if you're thinking about wanting to be a player and want to know a little bit more about development, if you're a coach or a parent, I highly recommend you go check that out, and hopefully you can get something out of it.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. We appreciate your time here. And that's going to do it here for this episode of You Know Him Right. For our very special guest, Jimmy Conrad, my co-host Joe Calabrese, I'm Nick Durst, and this has been You Know Him Right. Thank you.